The following podcast contains three mates talking shit over some beers. As you can imagine, the language can get a wee bit hairy from time to time. So, get involved. Grab a beer and join us for Drunk Therapy, the podcast.
You might remember many, many months ago when we had Chrissy Meakin in here. I had to put a disclaimer at the description of that episode saying that we actually do like English people. And... And I say we, it's probably me because of my stories when I was younger and travelling and stuff like that. So
it's a staunch nationalist.
But the thing is, it's like, I know the cop-out answer to this is go, oh, well, you know, I've got friends that are English, so it's fine. And today I do. Today we've got Amy Matthews with us.
Hi, guys.
That's slightly presumptuous.
Well,
should we do a friendship test? What's the name of Amy's first ever pet?
Sybil. It was a hamster called Sybil.
I am not joking.
Wow.
I'm not... Oh, my God. I'm not joking. My first hamster was called Sybil.
Get to fuck.
I will call my mum right here, right now, and get her to corroborate that.
We do have the function to call your mum.
Can we do it?
Can we call your mum?
You can call my mum. Let me get my phone. We can call my mum.
So you just need to give me your...
Oh, this is great.
Denny's just sitting there so fucking smug. Like, the smile.
Did you ask her this beforehand?
Right. No, genuinely not.
Okay. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's terrifying.
I'll be honest. I kind of hope it's wrong because I'm feeling quite anxious. I look like a mad stalker.
Okay. Do you
see,
want
we follow
number?
You on socials, but Denny follows you in real life.
I'm going to, I'll pass you my phone. It's the one that says mobile, not work.
So read that. No, don't read that.
Yeah, don't do that.
I was like,
it's all right. I know. Anyway, James,
I can't
got these
cope with what just happened.
Yeah, that's fucking bizarre. Were you expecting to have your mind blown this
quickly?
No,
it's some Derren Brown stuff, man. That's crazy.
Well, Denny,
I can't cope with that.
How did you fucking? Did you just throw like an animal and a name?
Next questions. What's gonna? You're gonna know about all of my life. Oh, here she is. Hey, Mum.
Is she through the desk? Is she... What's her name, by the way?
Jill.
Jill. Oh, great.
I could
good
have
name.
Told you that, Shane. Could have told you that.
Jill's not gone to the desk.
Hey, Mum.
Jill, give us 2 seconds.
Oh, sorry. Hi, Mum. I'm on the radio.
Hello.
This feels very phone a friend. This is fun. So basically, I just need you to corroborate something for me. Can you remember what the name of my first hamster was?
Rushda.
No, that was my sister's.
Sybil.
Say again?
Sybil.
Woo!
No, no.
Okay,
way.
So someone just guessed the name of my first pet and I just needed that confirmed by you.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes, that's amazing. Are you okay?
Yes, I'm good. Thank you.
Good.
Nice to hear from you.
Oh, and you. Shall I leave you to your evening?
No, wait, Jill, before you go.
Oh, this is my friend.
Hello, friend.
Hello. What are you doing right now?
What am I doing right now? I've just got in from work and I'm just about to make a cup of tea.
All right. Well, we won't hold you, but thank you very much for coming in and proving this story because we all thought it was too good to be true. But our friend Danny is the mentalist, apparently.
Crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
Don't worry, Joe.
He's always had crazy pet names.
Yeah. This is true.
Ask about the fish.
Ask about the fish. That sounds so sinister.
Right. I'm writing the fish down.
We will be asking about the fish, Mum.
Did Sybil not go out with Elvis?
I don't know.
Sybil was a hamster. Elvis never went out of a hamster.
Jill's still on the line just going, what's happening here?
Yeah. Mum, you're part of a podcast now.
Well,
Jill, just before you go, do you have your permission to use this?
If you really want to.
We do. Thank you very much.
Bye, Mum. See you. Bye.
Bye. Take care. Love you.
Bye. Love you. Bye.
It's that moment when your mum's like hanging around too long in front of your new mates and she's like, you're like, go away, Mum. Mum, my new friends are here. Leave me alone.
That's great. She'll love that.
I don't think we... Firstly, apologies. You are clearly a very, very good friend.
That's amazing.
Sorry,
boy, your face red right now.
Can't believe that.
My favourite moment ever.
Well, we've peaked. This is it. Everything is downhill for the rest of this.
That's bonkers.
Tell us a fish story.
A fish story. Oh, so we got fish when we were very, very small, myself and my sister, and the names were ridiculous. They lived for 7 years, by the way. Which is very funny because your parents get you them because they know they're sort of going to be dead within the year so they can flush them away and be fine again. But they lasted 7 years and then they both died within a day of each other. It was like not The Notebook. What's the other one?
Spoilers?
No, the Nicholas Sparks one where they both... Yeah, it was The Notebook. They both died on the same day of heartbreak.
I've never seen it and now you've ruined it.
Well, there you go.
That's a cute goldfish story.
Very cute.
Though.
But they were called Scaly. Damn. And Pinky Shiny.
I wouldn't have guessed them. Yeah. My powers only go so far.
It's not bad, is it?
That's good. Like, the thing I reckon about goldfish, and we're just going on a weird tangent, but goldfish are like a bridging animal. Like, your kids want a dog, obviously, because they're the best, and then kind of cats are okay, and I guess maybe hamsters are in the mix somewhere.
Cats are okay.
Yeah.
Cats are more than okay.
They're no dogs, but, like, your mum and your dad went, you know what, fuck it. Have a fish. Yeah. Because who cares?
A gateway drug.
Yeah, exactly. It's a gateway animal.
I used to have a fish because my mum was obsessed with fish growing up. So we had the cichlid fish, we had the Maori fish, which came from tropical waters down your side of the world, Shane. And I swear to God, we used to have this big blue fish that came up to be petted.
Love that. Love
like
that.
It used to swim up to the top of the tank. You could just put your fingers in and like give a wee bit.
Do you know that fish swim at the top of the tank when they're hungry and they're looking for food?
No, but this one, like,
not this one.
The wee dogs or cats would come up to you and go, "Ah, pet my head." That's what that looked like. Pretty sure it died not long after.
Yeah, it's because you didn't fucking feed it. It was coming up because it was hungry. We've all interrupted Danny's intro. He's just had a moment of his life, Danny.
So you like English people is what you're saying?
That was it, yeah. So I passed the friendship test.
I love that.
It's the cop-out line, is that people always say that they have friends of someone that they're perceived to dislike.
Yeah, and
so
here we go.
Just proved it.
Don't worry, I don't like English people.
That's what I was going to ask you. Apart from your mum, who's the new best mum on the podcast.
Absolutely, she is.
Why don't you like English people?
Well, no, it's not that. It's that... I mean, historically, need I say any more? I'm going to use that tentatively. We English people have a ropey history, I would say. We've upset a lot of people, and it means that the good guys still have to. We're sort of, you know, still.
So when did you come up? When did you?
When did I move here? I moved here just over 2 years ago. Yeah, just over 2 years ago, and. I'm very at home here now. Yeah. Weirdly, I've managed to sort of make a career out of being the token English person on the Scottish panel. So that's going quite well for me.
One of the things I was thinking is that because it's like the most tedious, awful question to ask. No, it's not. This isn't what I'm going to ask. But when you read about like people who interview female comics and you ask them, well, what's it like being like a woman getting comedy? Yeah. And we can actually ask a question like, it's very brave being English and trying to get comedy in Scotland.
Well, do you know what? So Edinburgh doesn't count. Because it's so international and it's mainly English people that it's mainly English tourists that you're gigging to, you know,
like a home crowd.
Yeah, but also like even the Scottish people in Edinburgh think they're English, so you know it's a real kind of safe space there. I struggled a bit when I first moved here and started gigging in Glasgow. I felt it mainly because I pronounce it Glasgow. I learned that early on, but it's gotten better. I think because the issue I've got is I'm fully aware that I sound like the enemy. Like I've got such a sort of annoying RP, like Radio 4 voice. And there is, I've managed to pick the only place in the UK where that is a disadvantage. Like everywhere else, that really put me to the front of the queue, you know.
Have you ever been like mad heckled or have you ever had any lines that you just went, ah, fuck, you know what? You've got me there.
No, weirdly, I've been extremely lucky. I haven't had anything that I've felt I've had to really, really deal with. I had someone shout Baby Spice at me in a gig once, but for no good reason. I mean, I'm a blonde woman, I guess, but like nothing that I've had to sort of be combative about and certainly nothing English based. So no, I've been pretty lucky.
Does it feel shit having to defend yourself for being English? Because I was thinking about it there when you said we've done a lot of bad shit. A lot of countries have done that. But I'm starting thinking about the Beatles. I'm thinking about all these amazing comedians.
But a couple of good ones, yeah.
There's a lot of good culture in England, but then you get to a certain point and there's not so...
But I think that's healthy as well, because it's so often being sort of like white English is like the default and everything else is like has to answer to it. Whereas I think here, like you said, like, is it annoying for me to have to defend being like... No, because what I deal with isn't anything to deal with. Like, it's not, it doesn't come from a place of like actual discrimination. It's because people I was related to thousands of years ago did very bad things, and I'd you know, absolutely corroborate that. So, no, it's fine. I think there are the only time I've thought a few times about, I don't know, like, I do certain material in certain cities. Here, but I do that. You do that all around the UK and all around the world. You tailor your material to an area or to an audience. So I that's nothing.
So you're not singing "Football's Coming Home" at the Stand
I'm
in Glasgow.
I'm not doing that. No. I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever. I'm terrible at thinking of examples.
So am I. I just said the Beatles, and then I went, right, who else can I say?
That's how they were our best export.
I was like, just comedians. But, like, can I say any more generic?
No, I don't. It's funny though. My partner's Scottish, and quite often he describes things he doesn't like as just too English. That's like his thing he does. So like if he finds something, basically it's sort of synonymous with something being sort of twee. Mm-hmm. Or like he finds like Disneyland too English. It's like, that's pretty American.
Yeah.
Or, you know, anything that's sort of, I don't know.
See, I think we're starting to use the word Brexity as a sort of describing word. Brexity,
yeah. Well,
like,
that's the thing.
It's a bit Brexity, mate. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm pleased I live here from that point of view, for sure.
So do you think you're living in Scotland now, you're out, you're settled. Do you think you'll be here forever, or are you kind of not sure? Or depends
that.
How it goes?
Yeah, I do get asked that by family members and
why you gonna want you home?
Well, I think they want me home, but sadly, I really, really feel at home here, and I feel very lucky. To have that, if you'll have me.
Did you do your first stand-up gig up here?
Yeah, I did no stand-up in England. I moved here to do my master's degree, I gave it, I started at a student gig because my friend told me that he thought I might be able to do it, and it sort of got grossly out of control, and now it's my job, which is nice.
Hustle at it from looking at your Twitter. Like, you seem to be up and down, not just Scotland, but like all over.
It's busy.
The accent, mate.
Yeah, this gets you places. That's the bit actually that I didn't really consider when I started, mainly because whenever you start anything, you never picture yourself doing reasonably well at it. Maybe that's just like a low self-esteem thing. I don't know. But do you know what I mean? You don't think about
syndrome,
the... Yeah,
think,
oh, hugely.
There's no chance I'm actually doing this.
Absolutely right.
I feel that almost every day.
And I think, you know, that's an aspect of the job that I don't think... I certainly didn't consider, but nobody thinks about when they watch people on TV or go to gigs. It's a job. People think comedy is quite a sort of... I think people think it's quite a glamorous sort of rock and roll thing to do. It is literally travelling and admin. That is what the job is. So little of it is actually doing gigs, and most of it is getting... I got a 36-hour round-trip mega bus to Cardiff to do a 15-minute gig. And that's a more realistic representation of the job than... You know, being on TV.
Shane, I'll just one more thing. I quite like how we're using this podcast, like when we had Darren in a couple of weeks ago. We're just trying to like put people off stand up.
It's horrible, don't do it.
Just as I'm trying to get back in it, I'm just like, see if you're trying to get in it. Don't, it's pure shite. All those
hard.
Open mic spots have
seen
up for
the competition
me.
From coming
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
We're full. it's a lot of travelling and a lot, not fun travelling, not jet setting travelling, like megabus travelling. Realistically, you can travel for a day to do a bad gig and then come home again.
So you were saying you went to, what was the trip to go to Cardiff? Like, what was the round
trip?
Yeah,
so I did, so I obviously live in Edinburgh. I got I got a train through to Glasgow. I got a midnight bus from Glasgow to Birmingham, which took 8 or 9 hours. Then I had 3 hours to kill there. Then I got a train from there to Bristol, had 3 hours to kill there. Then got another train from Bristol to Cardiff. I did a 15-minute spot. Crashed at my friend's house, did exactly the same trip the following day.
Fuck.
So it's a 36-hour train journey to do a gig that I'm gonna how do I put this? That was mildly derailed by someone with very, very persistent Tourette syndrome. Nice. And I felt so bad for her because she just wanted to have a night out, and good on her, that's great. It did make my 15 minutes quite difficult, but it was, no, it was fine. It was okay. But
not when you're filming for the DVD.
No, but no, it was absolutely fine. And it was a nice gig. And unless you think you can travel and travel for a bad time, just don't bother. it's mad.
It must be something about Cardiff. I go to Cardiff quite often for work, right? Mm. So one time I was coming back and the plane was set to go at 7. So 7 comes, nothing said, still saying, you know, sit in the lounge. Basically, after about 4 hours, they went, oh, this is delayed. And we went, no shit.
Yeah.
And by this time, it's about 11:30. Everything in the airport's closed. And then they go to boarding. So we all went to boarding and they went, oh, the flight's cancelled. It was like this fucking weird emotional roller coaster. So we ended up because there were no flights back from Cardiff until fucking Monday. This was Friday night. People were like, oh, I've got weddings to go to.
Yeah.
So they ended up putting us on taxis. So we got taxis from Cardiff to Edinburgh. And during my taxi, right, the taxi driver was fucking like opening the window. So this is the middle of the night, opening the window every hour. Just to, I don't know, give it, freshen up the car or whatever, but it just woke me up. So, like, it was kind of like hell anyway. You're in a taxi going for, like, a, you know, 10-hour drive.
Mm.
This cunt keeps fucking opening the window. And, like, the first few times, like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, sorry, you know, you're all right, don't worry. And then, like,
then it becomes torture.
After about 4 or 5 times, you're like, mate, do you want to fucking stop? Like, you're getting a bit rowdy on it. You're ready to go, fuck, I wonder if I punch him, if I could get away with it. Like, can I steal his taxi? Is that Grand Theft Auto?
Also, my concern with that would be you're told to wind the window down if you're feeling tired at the wheel.
That's what I was thinking.
I think I'd be a bit nervy.
He always had a cheeky smile.
That wasn't the worst thing that happened in this taxi journey, though, was it, Shane?
No, so he comes via, like, Glasgow, and I was like, oh, can you let me out here, mate? And he's like, no, I've got to take you to Edinburgh, health and safety, all that shit. And I went, okay, that sucks, but whatever.
By the way, fuck off. There's no health and safety in the taxi.
I was going to say, what code of conduct is he going by? But anyway, so we're about 15 minutes out of Edinburgh, away from the airport, and all of a sudden, he fucking chucks his hazards on and slams on his brakes in the middle of the motorway, like slams, locks up, and goes into the lay-by. And we're like, what the fuck's happening? He jumps out of the car, jumps a fence, and, like, goes, and we're like, by the stage, the people in the back have woken up and they're going, what the fuck is he doing? He must be taking a piss. And we had a laugh and, like, genuinely, like, this dude needed to go to the toilet that much. He just ran out and jumped out. The problem was he didn't come back for about 10 minutes.
Oh, no.
And when he came back, he was really embarrassed, like, really embarrassed. And we're going, oh, fuck. He didn't say anything, but he just opened up the glove box and got some wet wipes, jumped the fence again and came back. And we're like,
stop.
He shat himself. And we're like, no. And we're like, that can't be a thing. That doesn't happen in real life. He gets in the car, and honestly, it's 15 minutes, the worst 15 minutes I've ever had in my life, because imagine 10 is the strongest smell. It's a 9 of poop. And no one's talking about it.
No.
He's like embarrassed as fuck. We're sitting there going, this is the weirdest fuck. I've been awake like 24 hours by this stage going, this guy just shat himself. And he takes us to the airport. We get out. And I hadn't said a word to these guys in the taxi all night because they fell asleep straight away. And we got out and looked at each other and went, did he just shit himself? And we just had a proper bonding moment of, that taxi driver shit himself.
God.
It was fucking horrendous. I never had 15 minutes last longer. It was just like, ugh. And he was like, looking forward, red, sweaty, and we're like, that's so fucking grim.
Oh, God. Throw an unpaid gig into that. And
15-minute yeah, stand-up set absolutely. With someone of Tourette's in there.
Sounds like he was just trying to innocently go out the window and you kept shouting at him to stop. It's on you.
Do you think he got a hotel or drove back down the road like that?
He said he was going to drive back, and the dude looked like he was like, oh, do you know where I could get a coffee? And I was like, genuinely probably anywhere, mate. Sorry, I wasn't, trying to be a dick. I was like, I don't have time for small talk.
Why would he want to get something that might impact these bowels again?
Mate, he's cleared out. He's cleared his bowels out. He knows he's good for...
He's got a clean slate.
He's got, 9 hours to drive back down. He can get to just out of Cardiff before he shits himself next. It was honestly, and people, were like, that's not true. And I was like, honestly, I couldn't even make
to
that
To be fair, on my... my train, I could dream. On my megabus back, there was a family behind me, and with 3 very small children, and that's tough enough, you know. That's, and I felt so sorry for the mum, because that I can't imagine a worse scenario. But then the kid, I reckon she was about 3, was sick down the back of my seat, and my empathy waned. But I just, this has been sort of fine and tolerable, but that's absolutely the last straw. It was awful.
Yeah.
But that's
fucking hell. What did you do? Did you spark up, or were you just kind of sitting there?
I did the British
covered
thing, put a podcast in and pretended I couldn't. Yeah. Didn't know it had happened. Yep.
Why are we such shite bags, man? If that was an American, they'd be like, what the fuck are you doing filming that? It'd be all over social media.
I don't know if I've said this before in this podcast, but when I worked out in Spain, the joke about British people is that there's a falseness about our politeness. You see, the way we say thanks when people hold a door open for us, or we apologise when somebody walks into us. They think that we're fake. There's,
they think we're
falseness.
American.
Yeah. Where that's so when we think that you're on holiday and somewhere in Europe and you think they're dicks, that's they think we're dicks. That's
funny. Yeah.
But they are dicks, aren't they?
So Richard Ashcroft
Brexity.
That was Brexity.
He had the right idea in Bittersweet Symphony. You're allowed to just charge into cunts now. It's fine. Don't apologise. And you're just being European. Sorry, I'm just
very
being
cultured.
Mediterranean. Dink. Elbow.
Very cultured.
What did you study in your masters?
You know all that hard work I did to make English people sound tolerable? I'm about to undo all that.
Yes!
I studied literary modernism.
What the fuck is that?
Good question. But it's a period of, it's a literary movement in the sort of 1920s that I'm very enthusiastic about.
So is that Hemingway and stuff?
No.
You heard it. I got it right.
my sort of specialist area was poetry as well. So I've managed to sort of put a flag in literally the worst kind of a pretty already pretentious thing. I did that for a year.
1920s poetry, or just poetry?
Modernist poetry. So from 1914 onwards.
Langston Hughes?
Sure, yes, yes. Someone's Googling, absolutely.
Fucking rapidly going through the fuck-made poetry in the 20s.
I would like the idea of 1920s poetry and literature is just all about, oh, thank fuck that war's over.
So
like,
oh,
don't need to go through that again.
You'd be amazed.
Or Prohibition.
you've got no idea what's coming, pal. So that was why I moved here, and like I said, I did comedy as a by an accident, basically.
And every time someone, it's like when someone says I study philosophy at uni, what hope has done the job world to get anything?
The thing is, people who study philosophy, you'd imagine come from a position of such privilege they don't need to worry about getting a job.
Right.
They'll be related to someone who can give them a job, you know? But no, I've just always loved English, and I had every intention of going into publishing.
Right. That's
where I was headed, I thought. And then I decided 36-hour megabuses were for me instead.
Is it a temptation to write as well as do stand-up?
Well, yeah, it's a weird one, stand-up, because it's now a kind of... it's doing stand-up for successful stand-ups. I use successful in heavy quotation marks. It's such a small part of what they end up actually doing. It's such, you get people present and you get people do radio and you get people host things and, you know, and do radio, write things for TV, for, you know, whatever. It's actually a sort of, people laugh, you know, it's like such a predictable joke when you're like, oh yeah, you know, your degree really came in handy, did it? Well, actually sort of, yeah, because my degree was about analysing what was in front of me and then articulating a way to respond to that. And that is literally what stand-up is. Like, that is exactly what stand-up is. And it sounds, that's, you know, that again sounds pretty poncy, but people say, you know, does that, the skill set certainly, yeah, is overlapped.
So I suppose that's a good question for anybody that listens to this podcast and wonders what they have to do to put together a comedy set.
Yeah.
So what sparks your...
what makes me write stuff?
And pretty much, is it observations? Is it studying something and going, I'm going to make a routine out of that?
So I've got... Like, I think I might be being quite presumptuous here, but I think lots of comics do this. I've got like a notes folder in my phone that any little thing that I pick up on that I think would be funny, it could be literally like a sort of shower thought, or it could be, you know, something I see happen or somebody I know says something. I've got that kind of, I'll put that in a notes folder in my phone. And then when it comes to like a day where I've got time to sort of sit and write, I'll flesh that out as a sort of concept, as a story or whatever, sort of inject that and punctuate that with punchlines and actual kind of jokes that form around that. And then you test it at a new material night and you find out the thing you've been working on for 8 hours isn't funny to anyone else. And then you start again. That is literally the process. It's very long-winded.
Have you got anything on your phone that you've not fleshed out yet that
could
maybe throw 100%. To Shane? I won't put you on the spot, Tammy, because I know you're an actual... you know, comedian.
Let's go. Let's have a look. Let me have a browse.
That sounded like that kind of sounded like a DJ scratching.
It did.
Mixmaster Shane. I don't actually know what I'm not sure if I understand what you want me to do.
Go on, just see what's in the notes and you have to flesh it out and make a comedy routine.
Yes, because you are getting it, Shane.
Well, this is the issue. The people, when you write it down in a note, you think, oh, that's going to spark an idea of what I wanted to write about. What actually happens in real terms is you look back at it, think, I don't know what that meant. And these are the ramblings of a madman.
We work in radio and I used to do the exact same. And then I go, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, it's honestly crazy.
I went to try and put my next 5 minutes or my new 5 minutes together a few weeks ago, and on my phone I had dogs/ Jurassic Park.
What does it mean?
I have no idea why
it's
I've
crazy.
Written that.
I've just written with absolutely no context whatsoever, fab lollies. And I don't, it's got no, it's, I, that's not sparking anything for me.
Are they,
I don't,
those ice lollies?
Yes.
The three, shit, the, hey.
Right, so that's it. Fab lollies, can you do anything with that?
Not really, I'm not funny. The thing is about fab lollies, right, is you get them by mistake once and then you have them forever because they're fucking always in your freezer.
This is true.
I got them for £5 at the co-op. Not for £5 for that. They were part of a meal deal. I was so fucking pumped.
Mate, what meal deal?
Oh, you don't have a dentistin, mate. Our dentistin gives us... Our co-op's fucking
mate,
got meal deals.
I know what a meal deal is, mate. I'm not
I thought you didn't know that a meal deal was.
But who's adding an ice lolly into a meal deal?
No, it's not the sandwich one, you can. It's like...
what other meal deal is this?
All right, so anyone from dentistin will know the co-op £5 meal deal. So basically it's... frozen shit that's awesome, right? That doesn't sell fast enough, so they put it all together for £5. So it's normally some chicken, some fish, some vegetables, chips.
Yeah, chips, absolutely.
Chips and an ice lolly.
Does this come like a wee basket or something?
It's the kind of thing that the Viennetta would be a part of.
No, Viennetta's a fucking high class.
Viennetta's are not high class.
Maybe in Shoreland you'd find a Viennetta. These are like fab lollies, are like the best you'll get.
I saw today a Viennetta on a lolly stick.
Ooh. No.
So you get like a tiny wee Viennetta on a stick.
Shit.
There's people
that's
out
a
there,
game changer, man.
I'm not dissing Viennetta, by the way, but there's people out there who don't buy the mint one. Like they buy the plain one. And you go, people should rot in hell.
They murder people, those, don't
they? I had my first Viennetta of my life.
Was
like,
it mint
within a week,
or normal?
Like a week ago.
Yeah, mint, was it minty?
Or normal?
No, it was normal.
Who gave you this?
I think I went and bought it from the co-op, but it wasn't a meal deal. I think it was, because I thought to myself, here's the process. I was sitting there going, fuck, it's fabs again, and no one wants fabs, obviously. I've already got like 9 of them in my fridge. So I went around and it was, I was like, I've never had a Viennetta. And I was going, yeah, you're an adult. You deserve it. You pay your taxes. You earn a wage.
New year, new me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to get fatter on this Viennetta. And like, honestly, it was... Yeah, pretty good.
Nothing crunchies like a Viennetta.
No, Fab's it all right.
Mate, I've got nine of them that are coming for you.
Thanks.
We've just written.
You said that like a.
There you go. That's exactly what you're thinking.
You've got a type five.
That's like a really friendly threat there. Mm. Like, I've got nine fabs and they are coming for
you.
Well,
no, it's sort of like you have to earn it, because if you get through the terrible bit at the top, it gets slightly better in the middle.
Yeah.
And then you got the sprinkles at the bottom.
Is that the same as the fruit pastels, Lolly? It's like,
yes,
you get beyond the shit colours.
Absolutely.
And
there's
nice.
Definitely a metaphor for life.
100%. Absolutely.
Do you guys get Neapolitan?
Yes.
Yeah. No, what the fuck are you talking
you
about?
You know Neapolitan ice cream.
It's
you
the do. Three colours, basically. It's like vanilla, right. Chocolate, and
yeah, you got that when you were like 6 years old.
Yeah, very 90s.
Every family had one flavour that they left.
Like, so
and
true.
It's chocolate.
Me never too. Chocolate's bad.
Yeah. Do you remember the mousses that you used to get?
The what?
Angel's Delight?
No, mousses. It was like they came in a tiny wee round container. In a yes. plastic bag, and you could just like sit with a tiny little spoon and be the tastiest things in the world.
Oh, we still
like
get
raspberry
them.
Ones.
We still get them.
Oh man, I'm making myself hungry.
You left chocolate?
Yeah.
What
I'm
the
not,
fuck is wrong with
not
you?
I'm a massive fan of chocolate.
Chocolate
ice cream.
Was the first you'd eat because it was chocolate and yum. And then vanilla, you're like, yeah, it's vanilla, obviously, but it'll be cold
nah,
in my mouth.
Chocolate ice cream needs to meet our required standard before you
yeah.
eat it. It can't
sure.
just be that
no.
cheap and nasty stuff, man.
Like, in a Neapolitan, everything's cheap and nasty, so it's
that's
like,
what I'm saying, so you wouldn't want it?
Yeah, but then the vanilla's cheap and nasty, and the red's just fucking red.
Strawberries all right.
No,
I
don't
strawberry,
want strawberry and dairy mixed, apart from strawberries and cream.
Mate, you would
as soon as I said that, I was like, apart from that famous thing that everyone always
you
does.
Would eat strawberry anything when you were younger. Your mum
yeah.
gave you strawberry, I can't even say it, strawberry, you understand why, strawberry broccoli. When you're younger,
what?
You'd fucking eat it.
Yeah.
You literally
yeah,
would.
True.
I am. Have you guys heard of, I don't know if it's here, apricot chicken?
No.
Apricot chicken's like a dish. Like, I didn't invent that. You can.
I've had that. I've had apricot pork years ago. I'm veggie now.
Is that what? Is that what?
I just like to as a caveat. Yeah. But I had apricot pork in Poland. It's like a real thing. They put loads of fruit through their meat as a thing.
Doesn't sound awful. It sounds all right.
Do they keep it inside the meat, or is it just cooked with the meat?
No, it's inside. It like runs through like a sort of rock.
That would be really upsetting if you ordered that over in Poland and it came with all that stuff in it. I'd get quite sad.
I can imagine you, yes.
I hate onions, so like and peppers.
Dude,
and lots
shame.
Of other things. So.
Apricots and onions are nowhere near. Like, you're acting like they're the same thing, though. They're completely
mate, funny. I grew up in a scheme. If I seen an apricot, it was in a tin. It was in a tin.
With all the other onions. No, like, so, right.
He didn't get what I mean. I just mean that we only had tin fruit when I was growing up.
Sad times.
Yeah, like fruit cocktail fruit. It was a treat.
I was trying to make apricot chicken and they have like a thing and it mixes, you mix jam in it. So you mix apricot jam with the sachet and then you cook chicken in it and it's lovely and all that kind of stuff. But when I was a student, I didn't have any chicken. So I was like, I wonder if you can do apricot beef. So I started making it and I got to the stage where you have to add a shit ton of jam and I didn't have any marmalade because... I was a fucking student.
You had none of the ingredients.
No, so I made...
You said strawberry jam, so you're doing beef, yeah.
I made strawberry beef, and I just the worst thing. Like, it's not even a little... Like, I put some salt on it and went, you know what, fuck, I'll just deal with it. I've made my bed, I'm going to sleep in it. And I was halfway through sleeping in my bed going, fucking hell, I'm going to vomit up my bed. I'm lost in the metaphor
like,
here, but it's like...
I like the ambition of that, though. That's like finding a satsuma in your fridge and going, ah, duck l'orange. I can do it.
But the genders must be like... I know cows don't have... like, well, they have consciousness, but we always think of them in the Attenborough Disney kind of way. But when a mummy cow is looking at her calves and going, one day, son, you'll grow up to be like president of the cows, and then just looking at the other one and going... Yeah, you'll be mixed with jam.
that really gets to me, man. The like veggie vegan sensibilities that are in my head that I really want to go towards because I'm not veggie or vegan, but I kind of want to be. And
you've
then when
spoke
you
spoke about it very convincingly for about 3 years now.
Any day now, James. When I start liking onions, but see, when you think about cows having feelings, it like makes me really sad that we kill
yeah.
so many of them.
Oh God, it's awful. Very sad.
Have you guys ever tried to ride a horse? Have you guys ever tried to ride a cow?
No.
They're not like...
Cows kill people, mate.
Yeah, I know. They're fucking savages. Like
that's why we get our revenge in abattoirs.
It's me and my mate tried to do it years ago. Well, we're kids, like, and we were like, there's a cow there. And it was doing fuck all because it's a cow. And we're going, I wonder if you can get on the cow. And we're like, oh, you couldn't get on it. And like, my mate just fucking raw dog ran over to it and jumped onto this cow and it fucking went. And then turned, it's a lady cow. I don't know if that's the difference between a cow or a bull. They're different things, eh? I know, they're a different gender, but so this was a...
Shane's got a bottle of wine in front of him.
So this one was, it had udders and stuff, and it went to town, it was like, it looked like...
So
like,
it wasn't a bull,
it was, yes. Yeah, no, it wasn't a bull, but it was like, it looked like a bull fighting bull, like it was going at him, and he was like a fucking, probably a 10-year-old just shitting himself.
Shoot like fucking blades at his udders or something like that.
No, the udders aren't that important to the story, but I just remember having this visualization, it happened in slow-mo, because I wasn't, he jumped an electric fence to do it as well. And I just remember the udders flapping, and I was sitting there going, I should probably go help him, but no, fuck that. Like, you know, it would be bad to tell his mum that he'd died because he jumped on a cow, but imagine telling two mums that both kids had died because one of them tried to save them.
That was your split second decision.
Yeah, it was kind of like, should I help him? Nah, he's not even my best mate. And the udders were like moving in slow motion was mesmerising.
Well, yeah, that's your barometer. He's all right. Kind of an acquaintance. I could survive. I've got more friends.
Well, I didn't even want him to jump on the cow. I thought it was mean. So fucking serves you right, mate.
Feel like I could get on the news if this plays out right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, on TV.
Start of a big career for me.
Amy, I'm not sure what the description is when Danny booked you to be on this podcast, but it probably wasn't that.
Oh, no, the cow chat was mentioned. It's okay.
I still can't get over the stuff at the start of the podcast with you and...
What, Darren Brown over here? Yeah, I'm mad.
I'm still saying there's a conspiracy here.
Do you want to tell everyone another fact about me?
No, because I'll miss. I'll get
you're out of magic. You're
we
out.
Can edit that one out.
I'll go out and high.
Well, I've heard you don't like Deep Sea World.
I don't. Well. So it's very bad. Yeah. I do a bit on stage about how bad it is. If anyone listening doesn't know, there's an aquarium in Fife, which is a funny sentence already. and it's a really like underfunded, sad looking aquarium. It's got this really long shark tunnel that you can't walk around. You have to get on a moving floor and it takes you around on a conveyor belt. But that's its like grand finale, and it's so sad looking.
It's awful. It's like see for Scotland, right? We are quite a scenic country and we have nice like historic touristy things. See when it comes to like fun tourist day out things, we are shit at it. And like Deep Sea World is like the fucking pinnacle of that. When you came on at the stage and started talking about that, Amy, I was like, yes, like finally, comedians are telling the real story.
Yeah, this is my truth, guys.
I used to get taken, it was like a staple of a school trip. You would go to Deep Sea World.
I can imagine that.
Yeah, I remember I stole some figures from it.
And there was a touching pool, which is a dangerous, I know, school trip, touching pool. Yeah, we'll gloss
over. You touch the starfish. But yeah, it's lovely.
Exactly, touch the starfish. And that was the highlight.
Touching the starfish.
Just imagine a starfish being like, show me where he touched you, sir.
This point.
You remember it as a kid, and there's loads of things we remember as kids that when we try again as adults or shit. And Deep Sea World is like the fucking top one of that. Because I took both my nephews to it. So when my oldest one was about 3, I took him, and it was shit. And then when my youngest one was about 3, I was like, I better take him, because I took the other one. And we went and see out the back where they have like the, I don't know, they're like damaged
the dead fish.
It's like, no, it's like abandoned seals or something like that out in the back.
Yes. Yeah. They live in like a little neighborhood
it's
out the
like
back.
A paddling
yeah,
pool
yeah, it is them. Like a paddling pool.
But you can see the fourth rail bridge.
Yep.
Out here.
So they could see where they could be.
Yeah, they
live
the water.
Absolutely.
That
so
train
they,
is holding
its
ScotRail. The seal is holding its ScotRail ticket going on Monday.
Get through Edinburgh.
A couple of dreamers in there.
My nephew was just more interested. Like, here's a seal. Like, don't be, it kind of looks like it's a bit fucked.
Uh-huh.
And he's just wanting to watch the trains whilst I'm making eye contact with that seal. And it's like a competition because who feels more sorry for who, because the I'm looking at this seal and I'm going, man, that's rough, mate. Like, I hope
it
you get
is.
Out one day. And he's looking at me going, mate, you look rough, man. I hope you get out of here
when
one day.
I went with my friend Lizzie, and she spotted there was a fish in the water that had like a chunk taken out of it. Like, yeah, and it was, you've never seen anything so bleak in your life as like a sort of half alive fish.
That fish needs a wee pit.
Yeah. Oh, it's so sad. But yeah, it's as per usual as well. Like, the best bit about it is the gift shop.
And it's done in about 20 minutes.
Yeah,
you go
easily.
Around it and you go, fuck, that just cost me like 20 That's quid.
Do they not offer you the opportunity to swim with the sharks?
Do they?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm going back.
I'd imagine it's probably just a little tiny pool where you put your head under.
And thanks, Shane. We're talking about sharks and like the fourth here. Like, it's not going to be special sharks.
Like the fish and chip shop ones. They make meals.
It's just a goldfish that was spray painted grey.
It comes up to the top to be petted. It sounds like the world's worst version of Free Willy when you were talking about like the seals just wanting to escape.
It is sad. Yeah. But in their gift shop as well, it's like the classic aquarium gift shop of like, basically, they spent the whole experience with like posters up on the wall telling us, you know, like how like everything's ruining the sea and the planet and pollution and plastic waste and all of
That's why we're stealing all the fish and not letting them live.
Exactly.
At home.
And then you get to the gift shop and there's the greatest display of wasteful plastic shite everywhere. And it's just like there's a confused narrative. Like, there's an awful little like like figurines, rulers, rubbers. I think you can sometimes get like those sort of shitey gemstone. It's awful.
I wonder if you still get, remember on every school trip you went on, you had the little polystyrene planes that you built?
No.
Do you remember?
The ones that you got from a Lucky Bag?
It would come in about three or four pieces and you would put it together and then throw it.
And the propeller would spin?
Possibly.
Yeah.
But that was, you either bought, when you went on a school trip, you either bought one of them, you bought a bouncy ball, you bought one of the snap wristbands.
Yeah.
Bouncy ball.
Yeah, and that was it, because that was all you had money for.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
I'd quite like a bouncy ball.
Whereas now, if I think, if I took like a child, not any child, a child I'm related to Deep Sea World and went, do you want to buy into the gift shop? They'd just be like, well, just give me like a PlayStation voucher.
Yep.
Like,
yeah. 100%.
Like, why?
100%.
We went on way different school trips than you went on. So like, I'm from Brighton and it's quite shit. It's a little bit shit. Was like,
you're not, mate, you're from New Zealand.
I'm from a place called New Brighton. So it's kind of like New Zealand's equivalent of Brighton, but it's small and shitty. It was the only place, I think, in the world that had Sunday trading for about a year or two. So it became world famous. And then everyone went, let's do that as well. And then it didn't do anything else.
What do you mean shops open on a Sunday?
Yeah, so like,
so you guys hate Jesus, basically?
Basically. New Brighton does. New Brighton's like a Jesus-free zone.
Like, no day of rest here.
My dad lives next to the church and the spire fell off and the earthquakes. Like, it was like, fuck you, God. You know what we feel about you here. But we went to a poo treatment plant on a school trip.
What?
Well, like from the sewers.
A sewage treatment plant.
That sounds more interesting than the world.
That does.
We've all thought about it. Where does it go? Especially after a particularly big one.
That's fun to have some expertise in that. You should have told your taxi driver.
It honestly made that taxi smell like a bunch of roses. And you're there for about 6 hours and you're just a bunch of kids going, no one cares. Like, see what you guys just said about it. Way funner than it was. There's a guy that's like the whole time taking you on a tour, but telling you about chemicals and like, he doesn't mention poos once, even though there's brown water surrounding him. Like, it's just the worst thing you could go on. And some at the end, the highlight was they'd take you into a room where they found things that they didn't think should be able to be flushed, but they did, and they were.
Wow.
And they came out like, there was like half skateboards coming through toilets. Stop. And like, they were like, this actually came out of a toilet. And we're like, no. And they're like, you'll never guess. John, tell them, show them the other thing. Like, there's like prosthetic limbs. There's heaps of shit like that. And you're going, oh, I guess that's semi-interesting. But this guy who told you the story, it was like his fucking creme de la creme. It was his big finish. He was like, soon I'm going to take you to the, oh, that weren't flashy.
The finale.
Highlight of his day. This is a stupid question, but it just popped into my head. Are all toilets the exact same size? Like, you know, the bottom of it? Like, because you're talking about half a skateboard going down there. Is there bigger?
Yeah, that's crackers.
Is there a bigger, like, pipe system? You know, because everyone I've ever encountered seems about the same size.
Toilets in America are not absolutely huge.
Nah.
Yeah, they're like baths.
Yeah, and then and the doors. The
are you
doors
sure you're
are
not
like,
thinking of baths?
No, they are like, oh,
and
sugar.
The cubicle doors are like
just
up to
shining
eye
up.
Level.
Yeah, well, the water level is
the bowl's quite big, but the bottom of it's still the same size, is it not?
I don't know.
I don't know, but yeah.
Shane?
Like, there's one thing.
I know.
There's ones in Europe, like when I went to Budapest at the hostel, there was one where the toilet was backwards.
Oh yeah, so you, this is disgusting, but you do your business and then it's still at the top of the toilet.
It's called a show-off shelf, apparently. Yeah,
but if you're doing a lot of your business, it's not going to compute well with your, oh, you know, your backside kind of thing. I'm being really polite right now. Because
and if you're hanging like fuck, there's nothing worse than, that's not good. Oh my God, it's just there. Like, because you look, you always have a cheeky look back, but it's not, it's not a good look back.
Just to check for half a skateboard.
Something that's just dawned on me about your school trip. See that thing at the end? Did that double up as a gift shop?
So if anyone wants to buy
a, who wants a bouncy ball? Nah, you're not right, mate. It's fine. Don't worry. You keep it.
That's great.
This is, Amy, this is a question we ask everyone. And I usually give it to Shane, but he fucks it up more often than not. And
no.
We listened to the demo episodes before we recorded this podcast. We recorded like 5 demos and we released one recently. And we've since found out, and Shane's hearing this for the first time, that it was me that originally asked that question. And you just fucking stole it.
No, but it was my question.
Mate, I asked it on the podcast.
In a
team irrefutable
meeting.
Evidence that it's my question.
In a team meeting, I was like, there you go, James. Here's a question that I thought of. But if you want a question, you need a question. If you're struggling, you can have this one.
I'm going to use my psychic powers to say that you're talking shite.
There we go. Now, the question, which is slightly revised because people keep asking, is what it means.
It's, okay.
How would you commit murder and how would you get away with committing murder?
Oh, gosh.
No, sorry to interrupt. Can you just tell us who asked it better? How would you get away with murder?
Phone Jill.
Let's phone my mum and see what she's got to say about it. Oh, gosh. See, I realise that I am the type of person who looks like they listen to a lot of like true crime. And all of that business. And I really don't. It's something I haven't dabbled in. The podcast, not murder. But I...
That we know of.
Yeah, that we really know of. How would I do it? Let me have a think. Oh, gosh. So I've watched a lot of Line of Duty. And if that's taught me anything, it's not to put things in freezers. So if I were to... Well, who would I be killing? Tell me who I'd be killing.
Who would you want to kill?
Anyone you want.
Your nemesis. Who do I want to kill?
Who do you hate more than
anything? Or a stranger. You might just have the urge to kill.
It's the manager of Deep Sea World.
The manager of Deep Sea World. Right, okay. So I choose a day that they were doing shark swims. She or he...
you want to murder a female? That's all coming out.
They would be plopped in to the shark tank. But what they won't know is that I'd have intervened in the previous days and the sharks won't have been fed. So they see her and they're super excited and, uh-oh, what a happy accident. So no one knows that it's murder. I know.
It's quite good.
That's quite good off the cuff.
So that's what I think it would be, the not by accident of her being eaten by a shark.
That's the best answer I think we've ever had. Because also, and I was thinking about that, I was getting like quite spurred on, you could also... give her some sleeping pills.
100%.
And then get her to do
that, because then it would be the toxicology report.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is
but
true.
They don't know how she got the bloody sleeping
Would the sharks
pills.
Not then feel the effect of the sleeping pills and you're also murdering an innocent shark?
Mm-hmm. Nah, because they sleep anyway. They move. They keep
swimming.
Well,
they sleep in halves, don't they? Half of their brain sleeps and then the other half switches.
How do... This is maybe that's a stupid question. How do sharks... Because they can't turn, can they? They can't go backwards or... They just have to keep moving forwards.
They can't do 3-point turns or anything.
They just need to go around the world again.
I guess you just
how do
turn
they exist? Is it a spherical tank they're in then?
It's a big tank for all of its faults. It's a big tank.
Good size.
So I'm guessing they just sort of like chase their tail if
just
they want to.
Oh, fuck, that's a horrible existence, isn't it? They deserve that wee meal.
Yeah.
What do you mean, how does a shark turn? It just turns. It can't go backwards, but it can turn.
But see, if it was a square tank or something that's in the square tank, it can't. It's not going to go around in a circle, is it?
Well, not if it's the exact size of the shark, but like if it's a bigger one, it can just swim within that.
Yeah, but it can't like go back in itself. Do you know how some fish can like double back, reverse park?
I don't know how fish do that.
I've never seen a fish reverse.
I'll show you.
I've seen one like do reversing around the corner. I've seen one do an emergency stop, but never ever reverse.
Really good at handbrake starts, yeah. Like, especially Nemo.
But that Fast and the Furious 9 where it's just fish. But don't reverse.
Yeah. Oh, well, listen, I know more about fish than you guys. That's what's coming out of this podcast. Apart from you, who knows the name? Oh, no, it's a hamster, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was crazy. You didn't guess Scaly and Pinky Shiny.
Can you do the same? So what was the name of Danny's first pet?
What was the name of Danny's first pet? Have you had a pet?
Yes.
Okay, I'm guessing it's a cat called Mr. Tibbs.
I did have a cat, but it was called Pushka.
Okay, I wouldn't have got that.
Pushka had three legs.
Oh,
a nice little Soviet cat.
Yeah. It wronged me.
That's a cute story, but you are a shite friend.
Yeah,
I am a terrible Scottish friend. Absolutely. I have never even spoken to your mum, is that right?
Neither has he. You can talk about this if you want. We obviously trolled your Twitter a wee bit.
Go for it, troll away.
You're quite open about going to therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a wee bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So it's so basically what we were talking about earlier about how stand-up makes you mad. Let's segue that way. No, basically I got to a point where I'm a very logical, mindful, organized person. And then I basically got like so overwhelmed with my work schedule that none of those qualities like cut it anymore. Like, I was just so stressed. Like, I would be walking around the street and just start crying. And I thought, you know, there's stuff I need to sort some stuff now. So I'm really lucky in the sense that I've got lots of friends that are very open about seeing counsellors and talking about stuff like that. And as everyone knows, like the conversation around mental health moved on lots in the last few years, so it exactly like you said, like it doesn't feel like a thing, like it's comfortable to talk about and it's a good thing to talk about.
It's very important to do so, yeah.
Absolutely. And I am so lucky that I am in a position where I can do that, you know. That is, I'm very aware that is a privileged position to be in. But I basically got to a point where I was like, none of these things that should be helping me are helping me anymore, therefore I need to seek help from somebody who knows what they're doing. And the way I put it to my friend as well was, I saw it as a preventative measure rather than a sort of, I'm really reluctant to use the word like fixing job, but I wanted to see someone before it became a bigger problem than it was currently. So I did. That's exactly what I did. It's fun trying to find a therapist. I don't know if anyone has done it, but you sort of have to go to your there's like a database for everyone's local areas, and each therapist has got like a little sort of LinkedIn profile picture, and they've got like what they specialize in and what they're about, sort of like selling themselves as sort of like a little like counseling Tinder. It's fun. I found someone new. Then you reach out to various people, and some of them will say, I don't think I've got a schedule that will work for you, or I don't think I can, you know, my skill set works with that. And then eventually you find someone and then you go and see them, and it's literally just it's a way of, for me, she's helped give me tools to cope with stress and feelings of being overwhelmed and anxiety and all of that kind of thing, which is really helpful. And also it's really healthy to have a person you can speak to who isn't family, partner, you know, friend, and as useful and important and vital as those things are. It's there's something really special about having a complete stranger acknowledge all of your grievances and validate them and go, yes, I hear that. That's absolutely okay. I recognize that. Let's talk about how we'll go forward with that. That's like such an important thing to do. And so I've found that really, really helpful.
Yeah, it's catharsis. I think I've said it on this podcast before when we've talked similar. So I done it last year.
Yeah.
Therapy last year. And I found the most incredible, but the most helpful thing. There was never any like seminal eureka moments. Uh-huh. It was just, that first conversation where you're saying stuff and you're hearing somebody who doesn't know you yeah. just saying things like, oh, that doesn't sound good, or all yeah. oh, right, okay, yeah. and I can go, oh yes, I am, this is justified,
this is right. like, yeah. I'm but nuts. I think that yes. also comes from a place of, so the thing that's changed, I think, with the way people approach therapy and the way that it's thought about now is that I think if I'd have spoken to someone years ago, or like when I was a teenager, and said that, you know, they were going to therapy, I'd be like, oh God, there must be something deeply wrong with that person that they're having to cope with. And this is must be a really serious sort of thing. And it is a really serious thing, but not in the way that I'd have thought about that years ago. I think it doesn't have to be I think it was summed up, but, you know, I think there was an interview that went like pretty viral, like where James Acaster spoke about him having to go to therapy, and their interview went like, well, it was that bad, was it? And he was like, well, what do you mean by that bad? Do you know, like, there isn't a threshold that qualifies for you to have to go and see someone.
It's still stigmatized, though, isn't it?
Yeah, to a degree, absolutely. And like, it doesn't have to, in certain circles, certainly. And it doesn't have to be like, I think the second someone goes to seek therapy or seek professional help, it's not a sort of declaration of things having gotten so bad they had to. It's just an alternative way of addressing something that's going on in your head, you know. And people do that different ways, but that is certainly a very useful and valid way of doing that. Like, going to therapy is no longer, this is, you know, that person has really awful, bad problems. It's just like that's a way for that person to address the issues that are going on in their life, you know. It's no longer, hopefully, something where people feel like they have to meet a threshold.
It's kind of a form of education, because, absolutely, well, previously, and I think that's one of the wonderful things about people being so open about their mental yeah. health over the past few years, all you're doing is giving yourself tools and techniques so yes. you can cope better with what's going on in your head.
100%. And someone that isn't doesn't hold preconceptions about that, and it's useful that that person hasn't known you since you're a baby, or useful that that person, you know, you aren't in love with each other. You know, it's really useful to have that objective person who is qualified to have that conversation with you and to help. And it's definitely helped. Like I said, I'm really fortunate that I've got so many really good friends that have, you know, have also have been to therapy, and they were really helpful. Like, I had no qualms I text quite a few of my friends. I met up with a few of my friends and be like, how did you go about it? Like, how did you find someone? What did you do? And they were like really, really helpful and really casual about it. And that's how it should be. That is absolutely how it should be.
And I guess, like, we always say, talk to someone, or, you know, reach out and stuff. But sometimes you don't have those relationships. Like, some people, like, I've got a lot of shit friends. Yeah. Not you guys, but, you know, I've got some great friends. But a lot of people have friends that are like, you know, I know, like, past rugby teams and shit, where I'm like, see, if they are my only friends, I wouldn't tell them fucking anything, because they're all a bit of, you know, they're all kind of cunts.
You have friends for different reasons.
Yeah,
right?
No, and I'm lucky I've got lots of different friends all over the world, but some people don't have those relationships or don't feel comfortable kind of talking about that. So with someone that's not a friend, or someone that you're right, you're not in love with, or someone that's just a third party, it's kind of like, look, I don't need a friend, because then my friends don't need to know. I can tell them if I want, and if I don't feel like I have to, I don't have to.
Yeah.
But you've got that other person just going, yeah, that shit.
Well, sometimes, sometimes when you're talking about your problems to other people, or you're hearing problems from, like, someone you love, you take ownership of that too much, so you can't be objective. You're slightly judgmental, and you're going, is it me that's making this person feel like that? You know, what can I do? Whereas somebody just straight down the line saying, here's a technique to help you through a situation. Yes. Danny, you've spoken to me, I'm not sure if you said that in the podcast, about some of the techniques that you learned in therapy, including the stop technique. What ones have helped you?
Have helped me. There's been, so like I say, a lot of mine comes from a place, and that's the other thing that's really helpful, is that there are so many different types of therapy, by the way. Like, you know, like, there are literally hundreds of different approaches and schools of thought, and also reasons for people going. So for mine, primarily was about feelings of being overwhelmed and stress, and, like, I guess I can call it work-related stress, because the aspect of stand-up that people think is going to be really difficult is how do you get up in front of people and do all that. For me, it's literally trying to manage a constantly full inbox, constantly having to travel, constantly having to, you know, dart around and fit everything in and not to, I'm at a point as well where I feel like I can't really turn much down because, you know, until you're in a position, a luxury position to pick and choose, you have to kind of take everything on. And that's the case for so many creative industries. That's not unique to comedy. My therapist has spoken to me about, like, I think she realised quite early on, and this probably comes from like a very sort of like literature background, I respond very well to analogies and metaphor. And she's spoken to me about the nature of like taking on too much. Like if you physically think about holding these things, if you go shopping and you have to, you know, you just go in for milk, but then like this thing presents itself to you and then you take that on, then you take that on. There reaches a breaking point where you've got too much. And you have a choice between whether you put something down or you get a basket. So you either remove one of those things and make it more manageable for you to hold. If you're not able to do that, you find an instrument of coping with that better. And that's been a really useful kind of thing. Every time I felt, you know, like that. The other thing that I found really helpful as well, she spoke about how there's real power in like silence. And so, you know, like on Remembrance Day, when everyone has their 2 minute silence, or whatever, there's a real like gravity and to have that time carved out to do nothing. That's extremely important for me because I'm terrible at carving out that time to do nothing, particularly because I think that's something that, again, it's not unique to comedy, but it's certainly prevalent in it, where you don't ever really have a day off because you constantly have an opportunity where you could be writing a joke or you could be working on that thing that you've been commissioned for. You know, there's you don't really get days off.
You're always on.
Absolutely. And the way that I've put it to my friend was, it's sort of like, you know, that period in your before your exams at school where you should be revising. And every time you're not revising, even though you need to have breaks, you're sat there going, oh, I should really be revising.
Yeah.
It's that mentality every day. Like there's always a reason why you should be doing something else. And if it's not writing for something, it's I should be emailing that promoter to get that thing. Because I don't have working hours, it's constant. So I've found she's told me to sort of take 2 minutes each, 3 times a day, to just sit and do nothing. And she was like, because it's a luxury to have time where you can sit and do nothing. So put real value on the tiny amount of time you can afford. Everyone can afford 2 minutes, 3 times a day, everyone.
And do you meditate in those 2 minutes or do you just sit there?
I try and do just silent. It can even be walking somewhere. And something I've really been trying recently as well is it's a real kind of symptom of our sort of generation that even walking everywhere, you put a podcast in, you put music in, we're so stimulated all the time. And I realise that actually really doesn't help. No. And sometimes walking somewhere, if it takes half an hour, I'd automatically just put something in and listen to something. And actually to sort of sit and walk, you don't really think about anything. You sort of let it all sort of pass through you. That's so helpful, just to take that time not to do anything and not to be stimulated by something.
It's very, very insightful. I think about that routinely.
Yeah.
You know, the constant need for distraction. And then if you listen to a podcast, there comes a point and anything you listen to or anything you consume, you feel like you're missing out on something.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I did that.
Also, I had this thing the other day where I was listening to a podcast. I was walking along and I thought, oh, I need to put a podcast on. And I was listening to a podcast. I was like, I can't believe I'm at a point where I need to be so engaged in something that even when I've got something on in the background, I felt dissociated enough to need something else to fill that. That's bonkers. And I think if you allow that, if you unplug, you know, people talk about, you know, having time away from your phone and away from your screen, all of that kind of stuff. And it's really valid and having time in nature. And that's really, it's, you know, a really sort of route one kind of hippie vibe to go down. But my God, it's so important, like to actually like sign out for a bit.
And be with what's in your head. It's funny you should say that. I can't watch TV without having something. Like I'll play a game on my phone well. I can't watch a film.
Double
even
screening.
I'm like, yeah, exactly.
I'd
feel weird if that wasn't the case. Mm. I'd feel naked almost, like, what am I doing watching this film?
And not having your hands busy. That's like something that just doesn't happen anymore.
And it ruins films as well now. And I'm saying that half jokingly. That didn't ruin The Irishman. The Irishman was shite anyway. But I put that on, and after that, it was like half an hour in, I was like, this is kind of boring.
Yeah.
don't look at your phone. You need to be engaged in this film because that's the whole point. You need, and then it was like an hour in, I was like, I'm going for my phone. It's nothing's bad, happened. You have like one WhatsApp message, which isn't important. Nothing's going on in the world, but that's it. It's now in my hand. This film's shite.
I spoke to my friend about this recently as well. I said to him, like, well, I read something on Twitter that was like, we are a generation of people who've lost hobbies because we have a sort of like productivity / hustler kind of mentality of everything that you do has to be useful or gained from or like have financial gain, or like everyone that enjoyed something is now like, say you enjoy making jewelry, right?
And say that's your thing. Out of it now
it's like, oh, I'll put that on Etsy and make money from it. Or you know, I really enjoy is singing, and now it's like, right, okay, so I'll put that on SoundCloud and see if I can get that. It's so weird, like we've completely lost the art of doing something for the sake of really enjoying it without having to get anything out of it.
That's why we do this podcast, by the way.
Which incidentally may or may not be sponsored by Drygate Bank.
great sponsor.
I think that's a strong message. Even if you take one thing, just get outside. We've said it before, get outside for even half an hour, don't plug in to anything. See what's in your own head and just go for a walk, man.
Even if you don't
off.
Like it. That's the thing. Like my biggest thing is that I tend to, if I'm left with my own thoughts, it's the whole thing before you go to bed, isn't it? That, you know, the things you don't think you want to think about suddenly all like put themselves forward. That's fine. I did a lot of meditation at uni. I was a vice president of their meditation, like mindfulness society. And there was like a technique that the president used to talk about how, you know, everyone's like desperate to like clear their minds, do you think? As soon as you take the pressure off of that and let them just sort of like wash over you, let them just happen, that's so much more healthy than taking like a conscious pressure to be like, everything needs to go. I need to have an empty head. No one has an empty head.
No.
Just let it happen.
I have that when I'm sleeping sometimes. Like, I get really annoyed at my girlfriend because she starts snoring but you hear her heavy breathing within 5 minutes, and I'm sitting there going, I'm still playing out scenarios in my head to try and make me sleep. And as soon as I stop thinking about the scenarios and they start taking control, that's when I'll drift off to sleep.
Yeah.
But it's not easy to do. You can't just let your mind just go boom.
No, it's really hard.
Definitely. We're just about to record another podcast. Listen, that was an amazing...
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me,
and
guys.
And thank you so much for sharing that as well.
Plug some stuff, Amy.
You've got the comedy festival. We're playing the comedy festival. You're playing the comedy festival.
Oh, yeah. And please do come.
Therapy's
not cheap, guys. Basically myself and the lovely Susan Riddle, she's a very, very, very funny comedian. You might have seen her on like The State of It and stuff like that. She's super. We are doing half an hour each at the State Bar, just doing of like basically brand new stuff that we're working into a show. So it's going to be a really relaxed, chill atmosphere, and it's a lovely venue as well. I couldn't tell you what date it is.
It's the 21st of March.
Tickets are only a fiver.
They are only a fiver. And like I say, it is literally just us two trying some new stuff. It's going to be really relaxed. And I'd love to see some people there.
By the way, I just checked. Not being rude on my phone. 21st of March is a Saturday night.
That's
a good night comedy.
That is a good
drinks,
night comedy.
Go and have a laugh.
It's my birthday weekend. We're good guys.
Danny's birthday weekend as well. So we'll probably pop by you. But thank you very much for coming in.
And, thank you.
Yeah, we'll probably see you on the 21st of March.
Absolutely. See you later.
Sybil sends her regards.
Say hi to Jim.